Welcome to a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Scott Burton, and it's Monday, May 14th, 2018. Thanks for tuning in. On today's show, businesses will learn how to pave their paths to prosperity. Alabama Jazz Hall of Fame inductee, pianist and composer Gary Motley will help us explore the intersection of American jazz and technology and hear about a workshop that will help you run for public office. Those interviews, National Native News, Bird Note, Music, and more right here, live and local on a Juno Afternoon. It's currently 47 degrees with scattered showers here in the capital city.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native people held a justice rally at the Nebraska State Capitol over the weekend. Native leaders say their people have come under attack by police, federal agents, and the state. They pointed to a handful of incidents, including an officer-involved death of a 29-year-old Native man and a federal raid on the Winnebago tribe over tobacco. Native leaders say while the incidents are separate and unrelated, they want to raise awareness and are concerned those in power are targeting Native Americans. A film about transboundary mining shown in Southeast Alaska will soon tour British Columbia. Up Rivers focuses on the lives of two Indigenous women with parallel stories on opposite sides of the Alaska-British Columbia border. Daisha Eaton has more.
These places of creation. Quesnel Lake is Eastern San Jamequa. It's the birthing waters of the salmon.
That's Jacinda Mack in the trailer for the short film Up Rivers. The film captures the devastation to Mack's homelands after the Mount Polly mine disaster in British Columbia.
Yesterday morning, 10 million cubic meters of wastewater containing dangerous chemicals poured into local waterways.
Filmmaker Matthew Jackson of Sitka has been traveling around Southeast Alaska presenting the 30-minute film. The film asks difficult questions through its two protagonists.
It's the story of Jacinda Mack and Carrie James and how both of them are responding in their own ways to the mining boom that's happening in British Columbia right now.
Carrie James is a lifelong resident of Ketchikan, where Jackson was born.
We need to protect what we love. This is our home.
He was compelled to tell the women's stories after he learned about the KSM mine, a large proposed transboundary copper and gold mine near Ketchikan.
The concern is earthen dams tend to give way. And we're right down on the Alaska side of the Unuk River.
Mack was thrown into the spotlight because of the 2014 Mount Polly disaster. Her community was just downstream.
We've been dealing with that disaster since then and trying to share the story and use it as a way to force government to update and improve laws around mining in British Columbia and beyond.
She found herself advocating for responsible mining in Canada.
The Up Rivers film is really a tool to start having these conversations around what some of the risks are with these projects so that people can be really fully informed when they make decisions that are going to last for generations.
The film will soon be embarking on a parallel screening tour in British Columbia. I'm Daisha Eaton.
An out-of-this-world object art exhibit at the University of Oregon includes the Native American perspective, as KLCC's Brian Bull reports.
Westerners call it the Willamette Meteor, but the Clackamas people call it Tamanawas. The original meteor was carried to the region by glacial activity 15,000 years ago. Native people deemed it sacred, but were driven off by colonization. In 1902, it was discovered by developers and ended up in the American Museum of Natural History in New York. Artist Garrick Imatani says he's in a wall painting, a series of photos, and a cast aluminum sculpture of the meteor based on 3D scans. He wants people to know of its relevance to Oregon tribes.
This object has a whole other history to it, has a whole other story. Here is this extraterrestrial object. It's not even of this planet, and yet it still becomes a container for the fraught politics of the American West.
The Confederated Tribes of the Grand Ronde hold annual ceremonies of Tamanawas as part of a deal worked out with the museum. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the law offices of Sanofsky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman, a national tribal rights law firm with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska, and online at www.sanofsky.com.
Support by the American Indian Higher Education Consortium, gateway to tribal colleges created by and for American Indians, accredited and local, with certificate programs to master's degree programs. Info at aihec.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, May 14th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host. And here in the studio on a Juno Afternoon is Ashley Snooks. She's the program's manager and program administrator for Spruce Root and the Paths to Prosperity program. Ashley, welcome to the show. Nice to have you here.
Thank you, Scott. It's great to be here.
All right. So I think a few of us may have heard of Paths to Prosperity, but let's back up a little bit and talk about what Spruce Root is.
Yeah, Spruce Root is a 501c3, and we are also a community development financial institution, or a CDFI. So essentially we have three main tracks for the work that we do. We have the Path to Prosperity Business Competition, we do business development, and we also do, we have a small business loan portfolio.
Okay. Can you give us an example of maybe a business you've worked with here in Southeast Alaska and what you've helped them do?
Absolutely. So some of the businesses that have come through the Path to Prosperity program our winners receive $25,000 grant award, and they use that grant award money for technical assistance or consulting services, and that really enables them to develop their long-term capacity. So we've had ice cream makers go out for training. We've helped with training for coffee roasters, lots of different opportunities.
Okay. And this, they won this $25,000 grant through Paths to Prosperity, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. And so is that coming up? Is there a date we should know about here?
There is. On May 31st, that is our deadline for our round one competition. And I should mention as well that the round one competition is for our 12 finalists that will go to our business boot camp. And our goal really is that anyone who enters into this competition, they're going to receive the training or capacity building that they need for the stage that they're at. So what I mean by that is, if you've just got this little seed of an idea right now, we want to hear from you. And we're going to get you some feedback on your application from our independent panel of three judges. And if that is just that little seed of an idea, then hopefully that feedback is going to be great for you. If you're a little bit further along in the process, you'll be able to join us, hopefully, for our business boot camp. And there you get 2 days of intensive workshops with experts that will help you really build your business capacity. So hopefully if that's as far as you get, you walk away from that and you're excited and enabled to build your business idea even further.
When will that boot camp be?
That boot camp will be September 28th to 30th here in Juneau. And the 12 finalists that are selected by our judges will receive an all-expense-paid trip here to Juneau to join us for that.
Okay, so let's imagine one of our listeners right now has this great idea about, I don't know, making kelp salsa. I know we already have a business that does that.
And they were one of our winners.
Okay, so they have that idea right now. What should they do here on May 14th to get ready for May 31st?
They should go to Spruce Root's website at sprucerut.org and click on P2P competition. Read the details. Send me an email at ashley@sprucerut.org and fill out the application for Path to Prosperity.
Okay, so then they may become one of these 12 finalists that would go to the boot camp for sure, and maybe at the boot camp they would win the $25,000. How's that work?
After the boot camp, they will have a couple of months to work on their business plan. That business plan is due on December 2nd. It'll be submitted to an independent panel of five judges, and the judges will review and then choose two finalists. I should also say that it's not just people who have a business idea, but even people who already have a small business that they want to expand further, they're also who we're hoping to hear from.
not to put you on the spot or anything, but can you think of any niches that haven't been filled here in Southeast Alaska?
Ooh, good question. We've had a lot of different great ideas. But I know one area that we haven't had loads of applications from in the past is the tourism area. And as the view outside of your window demonstrates right now, there is a lot of opportunity for people to take advantage of the tourism industry. We've got 5 boats in the water today, so we'd love to hear more tourism ideas.
And so, again, it could just be a brand new idea to develop a company off the ground, or it could be an already existing company that they would like to grow. Both of these qualify?
Absolutely.
Okay. So here we are, May 14th, entrepreneurs. The deadline's May 31st. And where should they go again to fill out their application, Ashley?
SpruceRoot.org and click on Path to Prosperity in the upper right-hand corner. You'll see information about how to apply. Also, please feel free. My contact information is on our website. I'd love to talk to you and tell you more, and we can bat around ideas to see if you qualify.
Before I let you go, what are a few of the things, the advice that gets shared with these individuals and these companies? What are maybe a couple of things that might surprise us that entrepreneurs should know about starting a new business? We all know it's really difficult, right?
Absolutely. I think the biggest piece of advice would be to share your ideas and to connect with people who are excited to help you. The more that I learn, the more I'm surprised at how many people want to support each other in the business endeavor here in Southeast Alaska. There's so much that you can learn from and resources that you can utilize. So do it. People are here and cheering you on.
Okay. That website once more, please, Ashley.
SpruceRoot.org.
Okay. Application deadline, May 31st, for all you entrepreneurs out there or small businesses that would like to grow. Path to Prosperity. I found you on Facebook as well, and it looked like you have some webinars that people can watch and other stuff.
Yes, we had a webinar on May 3rd, so that is on our website, and I believe we've got a link on our Facebook page as well. You'll get to hear my lovely voice for about 30 minutes, so feel free to click on it.
All right, Ashley Snooks, she is the program manager over at SpruceRoot. Find them at SpruceRoot.com.
SpruceRoot.org.
Thank you so much. Anything else you'd like to add?
That's all. Thank you so much, Scott. Really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Jazz you soon won't forget. Gary Motley Trio brings a lifetime of jazz to Juneau Jazz and Classics. Motley and his trio will be joined by clarinetist Richard Stoltzman and Mika Stoltzman playing the marimba with Jazz of the Jack, Friday, May 18th at 7:30. Tickets at Hearthside, The Jack, and jazzandclassics.org. Gary Motley Trio and the Stoltzmans, music for the heart and soul.
You are listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, May 14th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host. This is the song Solstice, and it's by Gary Motley. He is a pianist, a composer, an arranger, an educator, and he's right here in the studio, A Juno, KTOO Public Media with Will Ransom. Gary and Will, welcome to the show, you guys.
Thanks very much.
Great to be back.
It's so great to have you here. So I was telling you, Gary, this song Solstice really resonated with me today. Tell us about what we're listening to here.
Well, the idea with the song for the Jazz Trio, another one of our kind of interactive playground pieces, if you will. But the title comes from, obviously, when we had the solstice last summer and kind of in celebration of that. So our idea with music is there's this chemistry and this sort of thing that happens when three musicians come together. So we wanted to explore that and have some fun with it.
Speaking of musicians coming together, you're going to be hosting a jam tonight at the Lucky Lady, is that right?
That's right. We're going to be starting, I believe, around 7:30.
Yeah.
And so we want to invite people here in the community to come out and have some fun and bring your, as jazz musicians say, bring your acts, and we'll see what we can do. But certainly want to interact with everybody and have lots of fun.
Let's talk more about all these details in a second. Here with Solstice, tell us something else that might surprise us about this song. What should our listeners listen for in this?
If you listen to what's going on in this song, the idea with traditional music is you would have the piano playing the melody and then the drums would be quote-unquote keeping time and the bass is providing a foundation. With this, it's more of a conversation among equals. So at the first part of the tune, you hear the bass taking a more integral part or role in the development of the themes that are there. So in that sense, the bass player becomes the leader and we become the accompanist. And then there'll be these different interjections and there'll be points in the song where the bass player and myself will leave some space for the drummer to kind of echo things and change the chemistry of what's going on. So it's kind of like watching a tennis match, if you will. You're just kind of, okay, who's, you know, watching the ball go back and forth across the net and seeing, you know, who's, you know, whose strategy is going to be most effective in, you know, delivering things.
Sounds like chamber music to me.
Oh, yeah.
Let's take a listen to the end here. Tune. That's Solstice by Gary Motley, who is here in the studio as part of Juno Jazz and Classics. You can actually jam with Gary tonight at the Lucky Lady. How did Gary come onto your radar, Will?
Well, I teach at Emory University in Atlanta, one of my other hats in addition to being artistic director here with Juno Jazz and Classics. And a few years ago, Gary came on the scene and started doing some teaching for us at Emory. And from the first time I met him and heard him both play and teach, I realized that we had a really special musician and teacher here. And it's very rare that you have somebody who does both of those things at the highest levels. And we're so incredibly lucky to have him at Emory. So when I started this job here and started programming jazz in addition to classical chamber music, there was nobody that I wanted to introduce to the audiences here more than Gary.
Okay. It is great to have you here, Gary, and have you in Juno. Your resume, list of accomplishments is long. National Endowment for the Arts award from them, awards from the Great American Jazz Piano Competition. You're in the Alabama Jazz Hall of Fame.
That's correct, yes.
Man.
I'm a native of Alabama, and we have this organization there that that celebrates musicians who are from that region who've made contributions to the growth and development and advancement of jazz. I was very flattered to be inducted about 3 years ago.
Here in your description, and as Will mentioned, education is a big part of what you do.
Absolutely.
Why is that important to you?
It's important to me because the other side of that coin, if you will, coming from that region of the country, we didn't have access to a lot of the opportunities for artistic growth and expansion. So consequently, it was very difficult for me to learn about jazz in the area that I came from. And I decided that, you know what, if I get a handle on this thing, I'm going to really be an advocate and make sure that I make it easy for someone else so that they don't have to work as hard to get this as I had to work. But the other part of that, too, is, you know, when you have a passion for something, you're really enthusiastic and you're excited about it. And my mom was a teacher. So when you see that spark, you know, in a kid's eye, you know, when things light up and they really get and they get it and they understand it, there's nothing more rewarding than that. So that is something that I'll always strive to include as a part of my musical expression. I love being a performer, but I also love sharing and teaching. And in the process of teaching, I'm continuing to learn, so it keeps me on top of my game.
I understand you started playing piano, maybe classical piano first, or?
I started with lessons, but I really kind of started, you know, just kind of improvising at home. But again, my mom played piano. And in our house, there were five kids, and you had one of two options. You either played piano or sang, and I elected to keep my mouth shut. So we went with that. But yeah, started off, you know, with the lessons and that sort of thing for several years, and then kind of got away from it. As a teenager, I started hearing jazz on the radio and on television, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, those kinds of shows.
Go PBS.
Yeah, there you go. You know, and I found out later that the pianist for that show was John Costa, who was a native of Pittsburgh. So I started finding out about all these fascinating musicians, and it's like, I got to know some more about, you know, this sort of thing. And started just sitting at the piano trying to create my own little ideas and stuff as a teenager. Decided when I went to college that I wanted to pursue it even further, and at that point I started pursuing music and my education in music, and the rest kind of fell in place after that.
What's an example of a connection you've made with a student? You know, I think about you, and you had to sort of do a lot of that research yourself, and you were digging and looking and finding these things. What's a way that you can sort of help a student get through that faster?
Well, the idea, once again, I teach music as being a language. And when students understand that and they understand the tools that they need to speak the language clearly and effectively, then that's what makes a difference. One of my favorite stories was a student that I was doing a residency at a school several years ago, and a ninth grader. He was having some issues and some difficulties and challenges in school. And I went in to do this residency, and I was teaching the students how to compose. Now, these were not jazz students. They were classical students in a string program. And gave him the tools and the resources that he needed. He created his own composition. We brought all of the students from around the region together at the local concert hall to do their performance, and he asked if he could conduct his own piece. And I said, certainly. So he gets to write a composition for his fellow bandmates in the orchestra, and he got an opportunity to conduct it. Keep in mind now, he was in the ninth grade. About maybe 2 years ago, I heard from his father, and he said, you may not remember my son. He was in the ninth grade, and I immediately told him who his son was and the name of the composition that he wrote, because he really stuck out to me, and found out that he went on to get a degree in music. He went on to Carnegie Mellon to get a master's degree in composition, and he's actually working in New York as a part of the education system there, and he's teaching music.
Wow.
So it was one of those things that was, I don't take credit for that, but I think it was just helping him to find his passion and enabling him, and that's the thing that we want to do with this. I've had an opportunity to travel to different countries working with students in programs where English is a second language. And music is a wonderful device for helping to empower and enable these students. So it's not only a wonderful gift, but it can be a wonderful tool for empowerment.
I like your analogy to learning a language. It is indeed a language. What are some of the first things that you do? You know, I'm thinking about when we all try and learn a new language. We get some flashcards maybe and get some vocabulary going, try and learn how to say what my name is.
Exactly. You do the same thing, like learning chords and that sort of thing. We learn like chords and inversions and say, oh, you know, that's like a verb if you take the different tenses of the verb and conjugate it and that sort of thing. So it's like, oh, that's what that is. And we teach them how melodies work and what that equates to in language, you know, verbs versus nouns, you know, how does the subject work? How do we tell a story? And how do we put things together? But they start learning short little phrases that they can relate to. And then from there, you start to build a vocabulary.
And someday, they get to have this master's level conversation like the song Solstice.
Absolutely.
With the bass player and the drummer.
Absolutely.
Very cool. Do you guys mind if we take a little break and then come back? I'm really enjoying this conversation.
Sure.
All right. Be right back.
This is Bird Note. As a tree swallow swoops gracefully across a marsh, its long, slender wings glint a deep, iridescent blue. It glides close to the surface, tips its head down, and lightly skims the pond for a second with its beak open, drinking on the wing. Many birds drink while standing, dipping their beaks into a pond or birdbath, taking a beakful, and then tossing their heads back to swallow the water. And most birds can't pull off a daredevil in-flight drink because they just aren't built for it. Swallows are such virtuosos of flight that their skimming the pond almost looks like showing off. Drinking on the wing suits swallows best. They walk awkwardly on the ground on rather short legs, and their long wings are pretty cumbersome. So it's far more efficient to grab a drink on the glide. This adaptation holds true for some other birds, too. Common nighthawks are much bigger than swallows, with a 2-foot wingspan. They take their water in flight, too, while swifts, with an even longer winged structure than swallows, have such short legs that they never land on the ground. And so a sip on the wing is all but essential. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Support for Bird Note comes from Audubon Park Wild Bird Food, welcoming the return of songbirds with full feeders. Spring bird feeding tips at audubonpark.com.
Support comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, offering artisan coffees, fresh baked goods, salads, sandwiches, and more at their downtown and Glacier cafes. More information at heritagecoffee.com.
To a tune called Sea Change by Gary Motley. He is in as part of Juno Jazz and Classics, and he's here in Studio A right now. Gary, thinking about the song Sea Change, tell us a little bit, how did this come to be? You're a composer, you're an arranger.
Well, I've been exploring a lot of trio formats for a long time, from the classic trios like the Oscar Peterson Trio, Wynton Kelly Trio, Bill Evans Trio, and so forth. So that's really been kind of at the focus of a lot of the music that I put together. In this particular case, I wanted to do a number of different things. I added a horn. So on this recording, you're listening to bassist Billy Thornton and drummer Emmer Cotan, who are the my trio members that will be joining me for the concert on Friday at the Jack. So you'll get a chance to hear the original members of that are featured on this recording. The recording also features saxophonist Teodris Avery, who is a West Coast musician. And the only reason I make that distinction is because I'm primarily from the East Coast. Our drummer is also from the Southeastern United States, and our bassist, rather, and our drummer is from Turkey. So when you listen to this recording, you're hearing some really interesting combinations of things. So if you listen to the rhythm in that first introduction, if it sort of has a sort of Eastern, if you will, kind of flavor to it, then that's the reason, one of the reasons why. The other reason that you're hearing something that's a little unique there is it's not only that, but it's an odd meter. It's in 5/4 time. So I wanted to do some experimenting with that and bringing these things together to create sort of a unique approach to the trio plus one. And that's what we were having a lot of fun with. Where the title comes from is, as much as I have spent a lot of time learning the traditional standards and classic jazz that we're all encouraged to learn as a part of our growth and development, at some point you start learning to speak the language in a way that serves your own needs and interests. So the last two CDs that I've done, this one entitled No Reservation Required and the one prior to this called Departure. Departure was kind of symbolic because it was my departure from just doing traditional classic jazz to really pursuing my own sound. So No Reservation Required is the second installment in that. The kind of double entendre there is No Reservation Required suggests that you shouldn't have any reservations about exploring your own artistry in your own direction. Sea Change, which is kind of under the subheading of this, is about kind of a change in climate. And if you look at what's going on with us right now, I'm not a big fan of political commentary, but at the time when I completed this project, I knew that we were in the process of a climate change and seeing things that were going to be, we were going to be going down a new road and a new path. And the interesting part of that is if you go back and look at every period in history, we have certain sounds that are associated with those periods. If we look at the Beatles and their influence in the 1960s, if we look at protest music from the 1960s, if we look at the 70s, every period in history, we have these sounds that are associated with the change that takes place. Right now, in the period where we are now, and especially at the time when I completed this composition, this was something that was totally new for us. So we didn't have a sound yet that adequately captured, and I still don't think we do. I think we're on our way there. There's, as more artists give their musical renderings of what they see going on in the world around us, then we're starting those sounds are kind of starting to shape themselves. Interestingly enough with that is there some of the, I guess if you want to look at the world and say there's some really unorthodox or some untraditional things that are going on right now, if you take that type of ideology and philosophy and start to incorporate it into music, what's going to be the end result? So hence the title, Sea Change.
So it seems like the answer would be yes for you, but do you feel like artists have a responsibility to affect social change?
Absolutely. And it's kind of inevitable. That's one of the advantages that we have is that we are able to paint pictures and we're able to express things that may not be so easily or readily expressed in other ways. If you go back again and look at the history of things, one of my favorite musicians is Dave Brubeck. And we know Dave Brubeck as an artist, but not many people know how much of an ambassador he was because he traveled to Russia. He was one of the first jazz musicians to travel to Russia. And he wrote compositions for the Vatican. He was commissioned by the Vatican to write compositions. So music can serve as a way of opening doors and opening people's minds to help them to be receptive to different ideas.
We have about a minute and a half left of the song. What's something we should listen for at the tail end of this song?
On the tail end of this one, let's see here. Once again, just kind of a really lyrical ballad storytelling idea here, especially with the saxophone. ¶¶
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, May 14th. In the studio are Will Ransom and Gary Motley of the Juno Jazz and Classics. That composition right there, Sea Changes, by Gary Motley himself, he's playing tonight at the Lucky Lady as part of an open jam. Gary, what kind of musicians should think about coming down tonight?
Any musician who wants to come out and play and have fun. As I said, bring your instrument. One of the beautiful things about jazz and improvising is being completely spontaneous, and we make it work.
And what if somebody wants to bring a banjo?
Hey, there was a joke one time that somebody said that jazz uses everything but the kitchen sink, and then there was a group that actually incorporated a kitchen sink into it just to, you know, drive the point home. No, all instruments work. Because the idea, again, we're just going to jam and have fun.
And absolutely. You'll probably be leading on piano.
Oh, yeah.
And what levels of players would enjoy tonight?
All levels of players. Those who really feel comfortable in getting up there, you know, we'll find something. And that's part of how jam sessions work. We find something that everybody can play and what's appropriate, you know, for people at various levels. So that's another thing that I like about jazz is a very warm and embracing music, and that's what we're all about. We're about making everybody feel really welcome and warm and have a good time, and if they don't feel comfortable playing, you can sit and listen and just enjoy the atmosphere and the vibe.
Okay, so that's Gary Motley tonight, Jazz Jam at the Lucky Lady, 7:30. Then you have some workshops coming up, right? Is that your next, or is there another show?
There's a show on Friday at the Jack with Richard and Mika Stoltzman. Richard, Will, you want to tell them?
Sure. A little bit more? So the next public concert is Friday at 7, as he said. One of my great joys is bringing together musicians who haven't played together before and seeing what kind of sparks start to fly. We can set something on fire. And bringing the Gary's trio together with these two extraordinary musicians, really legendary clarinetist Richard Stoltzman and Mika Stoltzman, a jazz marimba player. If you've never heard it, you've got to come here, hear this, and watch as well. She's just a joy to listen to and to watch. So that's the next public concert. But on Wednesday night, if you're interested in getting a little bit more in-depth about either playing or writing jazz, Gary's giving two workshops, one for pre-college students of any age at 5 p.m. out at the University of Alaska, and then for adults starting at 7. And you can just show up. There is a small fee for those if you want to play or just to audit it, but you can get your tickets right there at the door.
And that is Wednesday night, did you say?
Wednesday night out at UAS.
And it says adult workshops, jazz, vocal, and strings. Again, Gary, what level of individuals could gain something from this workshop?
From beginner to advanced.
Okay.
You know, and I'm looking forward to learning, too. So we're all in this thing together.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, it sure has been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you, Scott. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you, Will. I think we get to see you tomorrow with the Vega Quartet.
That's right. Best of Beethoven tomorrow night at 7.
All right. Is there anything I'm forgetting, guys? Anything else that you'd like to share?
Just I'm also delighted that Gary's bassist and drummer will be sticking around and playing on our grand finale on Saturday night with Rhonda Ross, who's really musical royalty, the only daughter of Diana Ross and Berry Gordy, founder of Motown. So that's going to be very exciting, too.
Absolutely. You mentioned Mika Stoltzman. And I happen to have one of her cuts ready, and so you'll be collaborating with her on Friday, is that
right? Absolutely.
All right, you guys, thanks so much for coming on the show. We'll see you tonight, Gary Motley, at the Lucky Lady, 7:30. Admission is free, right, Will?
Free and open to the public.
Bring your axe.
Yeah,
that's it.
Thank you guys so much. Thank you. You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, May 14th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host, about 15 minutes until the top of the hour. And joining me in the studio now is Robert Barr. He's the library director, and also Peggy Cowan. She's on the board of the League of Women Voters. Robert and Peggy, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you here. So we're here to focus on a workshop called How to Run for Local Office coming up on June 9th. Is that right?
That's right. It's our fourth year doing it.
Okay. What is the library's involvement with this, Robert?
So the workshop is put on by the library, yeah, we're one of them, but also the clerk's office, the League of Women Voters, and the Juneau School District. And our role is to, basically it's an educational role. It's to help people learn what it takes to run for local office, all the different components to it, from, you know, what are the legal issues, how do you go about doing a campaign, are you in a good place in your life to make a decision to run, and some stories from people that have been there before, and what's the job all about? You know, like what do these people actually do with their time?
Okay, interesting. Peggy, you are with the League of Women Voters. What is your role?
The League is one of the coordinators and, again, partners of this. And the League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan political organization that encourages the informed and active participation of citizens in government. And it the League works to increase understanding of major policy issues and then influences policy through education and advocacy. And it's a sort of a strange, when I looked up the mission, and it's a nonpartisan political. Those are a strange partnership of words in this day and age. But the League never supports or opposes any political party or candidate. But it has been around for almost 100 years and grew out of the Women's Suffrage Association, and again advocates for a government brought to about by informed and involved citizens. And it takes public influence positions, but again, its major push is to have be a grassroots involvement, to work with local, state, and federal levels to make sure the membership's voice and the citizenry's voice is heard. Okay. And so that's what we want to enable people who to run for public office.
Okay, yeah, make local office accessible. When you think of local office, Robert, and thinking of our listeners right now who maybe have never run for local office before, what comes to mind? What are some opportunities? Where can people serve?
Well, so there's all kinds of different ways that you can participate in your local government. And we don't think about this all the time, but obviously the first thing, the easiest thing that we can all do every year is vote. So that's participating in local government. And then, you know, often we hopefully it pops into our mind, well, what else can I do? What comes next? And obviously serving in elected office is what we're talking about here today, but there's kind of an in-between, too, between voting and local office. And some of those in-between options, your listeners may not know that the City and Borough of Juneau has over 30 boards and commissions that people can serve on, and those are often seen as kind of a get-your-feet-wet stepping stone sort of thing to local office. And I know the school district has site councils. It's often a good way to get involved in making the decisions that enable our community to run effectively. And that's really what it's all about.
And those boards and commissions and site councils, those are not elected, right?
They're not.
So, yeah. Like you say, maybe a good way to practice.
Indeed, yes.
Peggy, you know, I think of you as longtime educator, superintendent here in the Juneau School District, and I imagine you had a lot of interaction with the school board, which is indeed, those are elected positions, right? How do those individuals, how do they help affect change here in the school district?
The school board is the policy body of the school district, and actually when I work with students on it, and we're teaching them about the executive and the legislative and judicial branches of government, the school board forms both the legislative, as in setting up policy, setting directions, setting the mission, setting the goals, setting the strategic plan, as well as the judicial, because they also hear appeals. And So we don't have a separate adjudicating branch. The school board sets that as well. But the school board is very important in the district. It sets the budget, and the budget is basically a priority document, and it has a variety of committees that work on things like policy and facilities and program, as well as the budget. But it is the people's voice. You don't have to have children in the schools. That's a misnomer. Some people think I don't have a kid in the school, so I can't be on the school board. But traditionally and nationwide, I mean, there's people that never had a kid in the school district, you know, that serve on school boards. So it is an elected official, and it's the voice of the people. My husband once said, well, why is so-and-so on the board? They don't know anything about education, because they're a citizen and they have a job that's not related to education. It's like, because that is the role of the school board, and that is the kind of democracy that we work in, that that people who, that local people that are the lay people, not the educators, make those policy decisions.
Do you happen to remember how many people are on the school board?
Seven,
and it's sort of a rotating chairs, right, or rotating
dates? For the assembly, the voters will be electing the mayor. But for the school board, the members of the school board will vote for their president, so who chairs the meetings, and it's one of the body.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we're talking to Peggy Cohen and Robert Barr about an upcoming workshop called How to Run for Local Office. It's on June 9th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. And, Robert, let's switch back to the assembly.
Sure.
How many people are on the assembly, and how can we get there?
So there are 9 assembly members, and they rotate. We typically, barring unforeseen circumstances, vote on 3 in any given year, and they serve 3-year terms. Pretty much the way it works is you look for the clerk's announcement for when election filing season opens up, and then you put your name in the hat, and your name is on the ballot in the fall. But of course, there's a lot more to it, which is why we put on this workshop. To help people learn what goes into it.
Earlier, you mentioned things like legal issues of running for office. Are you in a good place in your life? These sound like interesting things that people might not think about.
Yeah. So one of the great things about this workshop is that we have a whole lot of current and prior assembly members and current and prior staff members like Peggy that served as staff to the school board and to the city and borough of Juneau assembly that share those stories about what makes a successful assembly member and
Or school board member,
yeah. And when you're making the decision to run, thinking back to the people that came before you, because we've had people that served on both bodies that were in a variety of different places in life. So it can work regardless of where you're at, but it's different for every person.
Thinking of this How to Run for Local Office workshop on June 9th, you mentioned it just now a little bit. There will be individuals with experience. What else is it going to look like? Who's going to be there?
It's both elected officials, current elected officials, school board members, and assembly members, past of the same veteran ones, as well as staff in terms of both from the city and the school district, the city clerk's office, former deputy city manager, and so we'll be getting both the sort of some of the nitty-gritties in terms of those logistical things and how-tos and requirements, but then also some of the strategic or considerations from the candidates and elected officials themselves about how they approached it, what they did, what the job was like, as well as what the campaign was like. And some people love campaigning and aren't that crazy about the job, and other people love the job, but the campaigning is the burden for them.
Okay. So, this is June 9th. Can you give us the details, Robert, on how to register?
Yeah, definitely. So registration is on the League of Women Voters website. So if you just go to junolwv.org/run, that'll get right there. It's a 30-second form, and off you go.
All right, get your pens out. We'll give you that once more here in just a second. And it's June 9th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. And did you say it was free?
It is. It is free.
And is there a cap on registration?
We try to fit as many people as we can. We hold it in the assembly chambers.
Okay, so right down.
And we already have some folks registered. We have about 18-20, which is a good number. There's plenty of room for more, but with that number already registered, you're sort of guaranteed good energy and good dialogue.
Yeah.
All right, register for How to Run for Local Office Workshop, June 9th, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. in the assembly chambers. Again, the website once more?
JunoLWV.org/run.
JunoLeagueOfWomenVoters.org/run.
That's it.
Great. Thank you so much. We've been talking with Robert Barr and Peggy Cowan about How to Run for a Local Office Workshop, June 9th, 9 to 1 in the Assembly Chambers. Thank you both for coming on the show.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate you having us, Scott.
Mm-hmm. A Juno afternoon. I'll be your host again tomorrow, and we'll find out how you can fight crime by watching whales. Meet the Vega Quartet, classical musicians whose music has been described as a kind of clean intoxication. The Alaska Heritage Institute will highlight this June's celebration themed Respect, Weigh Your Words. And our community's high school principals will preview graduation. It is currently 47 degrees with scattered showers here in the capital city. Tonight calls for showers mainly before 4 a.m.